Benvenuti ad Alma Lectio, il podcast dell'Università di Bologna dedicato alle Lectio Magistralis tenute da scienziati, intellettuali e personaggi illustri che nel corso degli anni sono stati invitati dall'Università di Bologna a condividere il loro sapere e contribuire alla divulgazione della conoscenza. Nella puntata di oggi ascoltiamo Cédric Villani, matematico francese, attivo nel campo della fisica, matematica, dei big data e dell'intelligenza artificiale, che ha tenuto la sua lezione dottorale nell'Aula Magna di Santa Lucia il 24 novembre 2017, nel corso della cerimonia di inaugurazione del 930° anno accademico dell'Università di Bologna. Buon ascolto!
It is an extraordinary pleasure and honor for me to participate in this amazing day. In this speech, I will insist on the field of mathematics and its spirit, and how much mathematics is an art as well as a science. Nowadays, mathematics is more important than ever in our lives, in the world. It is a field that more and more students should study because society wants more and more mathematics, and because mathematics has become more and more fascinating. Better this way? Okay. So this will be about the living art of mathematics. This picture here is taken from one of the artworks of Gaudí in Barcelona. Gaudí loved the mathematics, loved the life, and used to think that the best form of architecture was obtained by imitating the artwork found in nature. In this picture, we see how he loved to get inspiration from particular geometrical shapes called the catenoids, which are obtained in this way, when you take a string that you let loose. And we see that the arcs in the background are the same shape, but taken upside down. Let me say a few words about mathematics and its paradoxical nature. Mathematics is at the same time rigorous and imaginative. Rigorous, we all know about it. The proof needs to be correct. But imagination is the number one thing that people use to judge the quality of a great mathematician. Here, on the right, is the formula that Grigori Perelman devised for the entropy, a quantity which allowed him to solve a famous mathematics problem, the so-called Poincaré conjecture. When his proof was known, what did fellow mathematicians think? They did not think this guy is stronger than us. They thought, where the heck did he find this idea from? It was extremely imaginative. By the way, why did I put a black sheep on the left of the picture? This is an allusion to a famous joke about mathematicians. It's a story in which three scientists are traveling by train in a foreign country, and for the first time in their life, they see this. The biologist says, "Oh, in this country, sheep is black." And the physicist says, "You know, we don't know if all sheep are black. Maybe there are a few fluctuations." And the mathematician says, "You know, my colleagues, the only thing we know for sure is that in this country there is at least one sheep that has at least one side which is black." This is, of course, to make fun of the absurd rigor of mathematicians. And it reminds us that mathematics is also a style of reasoning, always doubting things. Henri Poincaré said, "It's by logic that we prove, it is by intuition that we invent." Mathematics is also paradoxical because it is both abstract and universal. Abstract because mathematician is only allowed to study the world through the abstract reflection of formulas and mathematical models. Like the lady of Charlotte from the poem by Lord Tennyson, the lady that is allowed to look at the world only through the reflection of a mirror. But this abstraction comes with the universality because an abstract concept can be found in many different problems and things around the world. Something that is abstract seems to be nowhere, but universal means that it is really everywhere. Mathematics is inequalitarian and democratic at the same time. Very inequalitarian because we don't all have the same brain in front of mathematical problems. Most people think of professional mathematicians like me as particular people. But we mathematicians, when we read the adventures of the great legendary mathematicians like Gauss or Ramanujan, we are very humble and say, how is it possible that these guys could be so brilliant? On the other hand, mathematics is very democratic because everybody can work on mathematical problem. And sometimes it happens that somebody who was not famous at all immediately becomes very famous by solving a big problem. This happened to Yitang Zhang a few years ago. He was almost 60 years old. Nobody knew him. His mathematician career had gone very badly. And all of a sudden, he publishes the proof of a big problem in number theory, immediately gaining absolute respect from the community. These things occur rarely, but they do occur in mathematics, while in other sciences it will be almost impossible. Mathematics is at the same time very old and very new. Very old because what has been proven hundreds of years ago is still valid today. By the way, let me take this opportunity to thank the university here for organizing me a visit in the beautiful library in which there are some outstanding ancient manuscripts in mathematics. And something that has been proven 1,000 years ago in mathematics is still valid nowadays. No other science can say the same, in hard sciences, I mean. But at the same time, mathematics changes continuously, and new objects and new tools are being constructed every year. Mathematics is a solitary exercise because when you work all alone on your desk, you find most of the time that your brilliant idea is nonsense, and you send it in the dustbin, in the garbage. But mathematics is very social, and we spend our time going in conference and discussions all around the world, maybe more than any other scientist, because we live on ideas and we need to talk and discuss about them. All these are paradoxes. Another one is that mathematics is at the same time very, very simple and very, very difficult. And sometimes something that looks very simple turns out to be amazingly difficult. For instance, it's very easy to find a recipe to split an angle in two using only compass and ruler, and this you learn in school how to do. But when you want now to split the angle in three by general recipe, it's so difficult that actually we know that there exists no recipe. And people have searched for this for 1,000 years in vain because there is just no solution. Who could have told? But now the paradox that I will insist on is that mathematics is at the same time science and art. We like to think of those as different things. When we visit in Vaticano, the beautiful Raffaello rooms, we have the triptych, science, art, religion, as different worlds. But mathematicians really think of themselves as scientists and artists at the same time. Of course, there are some connections that can be found in popular books, and that I remember I discovered as a child in a animated movie called Donald in Math Magic Land, such as golden ratio in paintings, or the use of fractions to construct the scale in music, Pythagoras and so on. But let me not say anything about this, because these are really simple connections comparing to other ones which are more deep and beautiful. Let me, however, quote Leibniz with a beautiful sentence: music is the pleasure of the human brain when it is counting without being aware that it is counting. And let me also have a thought for Douglas Hofstadter, one of the writers that I liked best when I was a kid, or say a teenager. Hofstadter wrote better than every other one about subjects and stories in which art and science and culture and history were woven together. It is through Hofstadter that I first got acquainted with the life of Alan Turing and the problem of artificial intelligence. I had no idea that one day it would be my job to work on this for the government. Let me show you some other connections with art. The pleasure of putting mathematical objects in an harmonious way, not for any useful purpose, but just for the pleasure of harmony. This is a magic square, for instance. Gosh, I loved this when I was a kid. There is a simple recipe to fill these squares when it is an odd number. And you see, each number appears only once. And the good thing is that when you make the sum of every column or every line or every diagonal, you always end up with the same number. That is a definition of a magic square. This is a big magic square. The fact that it is big is not impressive in itself. You can teach a 10-year-old kid to fill up magic squares of, say, 15 by 15. When you know the trick, it's easy. Here it is an even order. It's a bit more difficult. But actually, this magic square was prepared using an amazing rule. When you take the square of each of the numbers in this one, like say 5 will become 25, and so on, you still have a magic square. This is actually so strange and difficult that such squares are dubbed by the experts as satanic squares. It looks like black magic. Why do people do this? Let's say, just for fun. It's a bit like in these magic tricks, circus tricks, in which the beauty comes from the how tricky it is. Let me now turn to a deep connection between mathematicians and artists, which is the way we are working. And let me invoke Claude Shannon, one of the fathers of artificial intelligence, here playing with Theseus, his articulated mouse that was able to find the way out of the labyrinth, a maze. He asks, which are the best qualities important for a mathematician to be productive? And he said, of course, you need work and experience. But then you need dissatisfaction, constructive dissatisfaction, like to say, this is good, but I think that things could be better. And it's something that is very important also by the artist. Many great works of art are obtained when the artist is dissatisfied with his production or her production and wants to improve and go further. Another thing is pleasure. If I worked out the proof of a mathematical theorem for a long week, and finally I find the solution, I have like a burst of satisfaction and receive enthusiasm when I see an intelligent way to solve an engineering problem. So he's saying that emotion, frustration, pleasure are so very important to be a good mathematician. And these are the same words that we know are important in artistic creation. Also, there is a style. Mathematicians do not write or think the same way. There are different styles. In one of his most beautiful texts, mathematician genius Alexander Grothendieck explained the difference between his style and the style of his colleague Jean-Pierre Serre. Both of them were working in the same field, algebraic geometry, but with different styles. And Grothendieck says, imagine that there is a nut that you have to open for eating. My style would be take a hammer and crack the nut. And no, that would be the style of Serre, take a hammer and crack the nut. And my style would be putting the nut in a sea of acid so that the shell dissolves slowly. And indeed, the papers of Jean-Pierre Serre, it's like, let's take this, this, and tack, tack, tack. And papers of Grothendieck, it's like going slowly and slowly, little step by little step, and you have the impression that nothing is occurring, but at the end of the paper, the theorem is proven. Two very different approaches. Let's continue and cite Aristotle talking about beauty. Master forms of beauty, according to Aristotle, are order, commensurability, and accuracy, precision. Doesn't it look like mathematics? Indeed, these are also three key words of mathematics, and let me insist on this. Let's first talk about accuracy. This is one of the oldest mathematical artifacts known. It's from maybe 5,000 years ago. It's an ancient Babylonian writing. And we know what is written here is actually an approximation of square root of 2 with extreme precision, like 10 to the minus 6. Now, it's amazing to see that the ancient Babylonians already had such good mathematical skills. Amazing. But also, think of it. Why on earth did they want to know the value of square root of 2 with such an accuracy? There is no way it could serve any meaning for them, any purpose. It was for the pleasure of the accuracy, for the pleasure of computing very precise value. Now, accuracy was also at the center of what is maybe the most amazing scientific achievement of 2016, the observation of gravitational waves. The people who did these experiments were able to spot changes in the length scales so small that it would be for us not more than a fraction of a proton. And this is the reminiscence of an event which occurred billions of years ago, like two enormous black holes colliding. So everything is amazing here. This is an event that was so much long ago, of such huge amplitude, but the effect is so tiny. And amazing also is that the observation was matching the prediction perfectly. This is possible only through accurate mathematics. Of course, it also needed fantastic physics and fantastic experimental devices. Let's now talk about order. We talked about precision in mathematics. Let's now talk about order. Part of mathematics is about ordering the world in categories. Things in this way, things in that way, and so on. Here is an example of ordering concept. If you take any polyhedron and you look at the number of summits, you know, vertices, minus the number of edges, arête in French, plus the number of faces, you will find a number that depends only on the global shape of the polyhedron. How many holes, for instance? Without doing any computation, I know that for the three here on the top, it will be the same number. A way to characterize the global shape of these polyhedra and to say that they are, in a way, the same. It will be a different one for these two because there is one hole in them. This is what mathematicians call the beginning of the theory of genus, G-E-N-U-S, a way to define the number of holes in shapes that is very robust. Let me skip now to the third world, the commensurability. Commensurability can be thought of in two different ways. One is when you are talking about ratios of numbers, as in the construction of the scale by Pythagoras, and here it's a problem about sounds, which is turned into a problem about numbers and mathematics. Or it can be thought of in the sense of concepts that meet together. Here on top is a very famous mathematical formula. It reads e to the y pi plus 1 equals 0. Some specialists of neurosciences have made experiments with mathematicians to see which formula they find most pleasant. You know, they put electrodes on your head, they put the formulas in front of you, and they measure your pleasure. And it was found that this formula is the one that got mathematicians the best sense of harmony. Why is it so beautiful? Because here, in this formula, which dates from the 18th century, are gathered five numbers which are most famous in mathematics. One, of course, which is the most famous of all numbers. Zero, which was invented for doing arithmetics and which was a huge progress. Pi, which is the symbol of geometry. E, which is the symbol of economic growth and phenomena which are growing, finance and so on. And I, which was introduced to solve algebraic equations. And these are linked together very simply with the basic operations in mathematics, the symbol plus, equal, the multiplication between I and pi, and the exponentiation between e and I pi. So these are the most basic operations and the most basic numbers, and they all are combined in one equation, as if it had always been the plan, even though these operations and these numbers were introduced at various moments in the history of sciences. We love more than anything when we have these concepts that are matched together. It's one of our reasons for doing mathematics, and it happened to me several times in my career that I find some of these links which were sources of theorems. Henri Poincaré, again, told about the profound beauty coming from the harmonious order between elements that the pure intelligence can grasp. Now, for many of you who did not pursue studies in mathematics, you may think, okay, that is very good. You are talking about beauty and art and pleasure and whatever, but this is not the recollection from my courses of mathematics in school. And indeed, there is a misunderstanding between people and mathematics often. People think of mathematics as a very boring subject in which you are forced to do operations that are complex for who knows what purpose. This is a misunderstanding. Paul Lockhart, a mathematician, once wrote a text named Mathematician's Lament, a complaint about this misunderstanding. And he said, the first thing to understand is that mathematics is an art. The first thing to understand. And he continues saying that in school, we don't understand this and it's not presented as an art, and we only see the technique. And he said, but doing mathematics only through the technique would be as if you were learning the music only through the writing of the notes on the paper, but never ever enjoying a melody. There is a depth, a breathtaking depth, he says, of extraordinary beauty in this art. What irony that some people are rejecting mathematics as the antithesis of creativity. They are ignoring a form of art which is more ancient than any book, more deep than any poem, more abstract than any abstraction. And it is school which did this. Note carefully, he's not blaming teachers, they do what they can. But our school system, which has not managed at teaching kids at the same time the beauty and the technique. And it is very important that we manage to do this. Otherwise, we will not manage to convince people to go in this beautiful and most useful field. Let me mention that you can enjoy the mathematical beauty even at simple level. And the very elements in beauty we can recognize in simple proofs. Let us, for instance, tell a well-known story about young mathematician Carl Friedrich Gauss, one of the great geniuses in mathematical history. It is said that once when he was a kid, he was attending school, and the master asks the students to add up all the numbers from 1 to 100. 1 plus 2 plus 3 plus 4, very boring. And all the young kids start doing these operations. But young Gauss just thinks and writes a solution and gives it to the teacher. What was the reasoning? He thought in his head, 1 + 2 + 3, etc., it's like one line of numbers. Let us reverse the order and write it 100 + 99 + 98, etc., down to 1. And now let us add up the numbers vertically. 1 + 100 is 101, 2 + 99 is 101, etc. When I do it this way, it's everywhere 101, it's 100 times, so if I want to add up all these numbers, it's just a multiplication, and the result is 10,100. Now every number was counted twice, so I can divide by 2 to get the actual result, which is 5,050. End of the game. Why is it beautiful? First, it's short. You don't have to go through all the painful additions. Second, it's more secure. The risk to do a mistake is much less than with the traditional method. Third, it's easy to generalize. Now, if you want to do the addition of all numbers from 1 to 1,000, it's easy, just the same principle. But again, it's the ideas that come together in a beautiful way. Let us reverse the order and add up everything, and then there will be always the same number appearing. And a number which is a repeated sum is like a multiplication. And then we divide by 2. It all goes together so well. And even more, there is an element of surprise, which is very often important in the beauty. Because you ask, why are we reversing the order? That doesn't seem to be any reason. So we have all the elements of beauty in this proof. And this is for a simple proof. But even at the top level, the most difficult proof that you can imagine, we are driven by this sense of beauty. Let me skip this. And let me think about one personal story. Oops. This is a page of the paper which I wrote when I was quite young, during my PhD. Actually, it was on the occasion of my first professional visit to Italy, which was my first visit abroad as a young scientist. I had been invited by Professor Toscani in Pavia. We had met a few months before, this was in 1997. We had met a few months before in a conference, and I had shown him a big mistake in one of his papers. This is a very good way to become friends when you are scientists. Then we worked together, and he invited me to come to Pavia. And when I arrived, I was very excited, and he told me, look, I have an idea, let us work together on this Cercignani conjecture about entropy production in Boltzmann equation, whatever. He said he had a crazy idea, and however, he was director of his lab, so very busy with administration, so he explained me the idea, and then he goes in some meeting. I was a PhD student with all the time in the world, so I sat down and worked for hours on the idea. And I discovered that the idea was quite naive. I thought, what a stupid idea. But while doing the computations, I had noticed something interesting, something weird. There was an identity that was coming up, a perfect square showing up for no reason. And I thought, this is too beautiful to be useless. That's the kind of reasoning that you do when you're a mathematician. And indeed, it was the start of the solution. And we wrote together with Toscani this paper, which I consider as the first paper that I am very proud of in my career. It's, as you see, a bit the same idea as for the ancient Greeks. If it is beautiful, it has to be good. And we are looking for the beauty in order to guide us to the best solution, to the truth in a way. Now let me say a few words about poetry in math. Sofia Kovalevskaya, the great Russian mathematician, once said, "Nobody can be a mathematician without the soul of a poet." And Leopold Sédar Senghor once said that mathematics is the poetry of science. What poetry is there in mathematics? Actually, several deep connections. First, mathematicians believe in the power of words and concepts, like poets. Poets will choose very carefully their word, not only for their meaning, but also for the impression that they give, for the content that is hidden. And in mathematics, this is also very true. Choice of words is made to convey intuition also. Mathematicians and poets are obsessed with the rules in writing. Think of it that mathematics is so much constrained by the rules of rigor in writing, and poetry was so much constrained by the rules of the rhymes or syllable count or whatever. And in both fields, imagination is so much valued. It goes together, actually, imagination and constraint very often. Now there is a third reason why poetry and mathematics are related. Poetry, etymologically speaking, really is about creating something, a world which is familiar but imaginary. And mathematics is also about creating the world or recreating the world by using models that represent the shapes in the world, or by using formulas and models and softwares which allow to represent very complicated things in the world. Take this example of art, the Fondation Louis Vuitton. Before being built by architect Frank Gehry as an actual piece of material, very tricky one, it was built by software engineers as an abstract construction. And it was very important to do this construction, this recreation, to make sure that the building would not collapse when it is being built. Take a movie like Gravity, beautiful movie with many Oscars. It required an enormous amount of mathematical modeling and software development that lasted for years before it could be undertaken. Almost everything in this movie has been recreated from mathematical formulas. And here you see the power of mathematics as a way to create a new world. In the world of gravity, gravity has been suppressed precisely. You could have chosen to reinforce it, on the contrary. You can do what you want, creating a world that is reminiscent of ours, but in which you can change the rules. And by the way, mathematics nowadays is very much helpful for movie, to the point that people like Edwin Catmull have received Oscars for their work in the theory of animation involving mixture of geometry and kinematics and other fields. Take a movie like Brave. The movement of the hair of the heroine has been obtained through a lot of modeling involving mathematics and physics, also as a way to create new rules of movement for this hair. Researchers like Marie-Paul Kenny in France and others are still working on devising mathematical and computer science tools to help artists and creators play with the shapes and creating new worlds. And in this, there is indeed the poetic dimension. Here is another example of use of mathematics in special effects. You've seen this kind of smoke? Has been obtained through tricky applied mathematics formula, which were so clever that the team that worked on this was awarded a tech Oscar from Hollywood. These kind of special effects relies on mathematical formulas and models describing the world. And it gets inscribed in a tradition of explaining the world with mathematical formulas, which goes back to the likes of Galileo, Newton, Leibniz, and others, and have been applied to recreate and reproduce every single phenomenon in the world that we know. All this was to insist on the fact that mathematics is in itself a form of art. Let me conclude very briefly by saying that mathematical tools can also be used to help artists create works of art of their own, in at least three ways. One way is to use mathematical formulas to create beautiful objects, such as fractals. Let me skip the process of making this formula, but it's not so difficult. If we had more time, we could go for it. Let us rather go into one of these objects created through simple mathematical formulas. And this is a fractal, so it has structure at every scale. When we change scale, we seem to see different worlds. All this is obtained through one simple formula related to the solutions of equations through the so-called Newton method. The same formula produces such different effects, and at the same time, things that are recurring again and again at each scale. And it's not that the artist decided to put spots of color here and there. It is the mathematical formula that produced them all. Now, this was one example in which a mathematical concept is used to produce a work of art. Other examples taken from geometry can be found in religious art from hundreds of years ago in the Muslim world. In the work of Gaudi that I mentioned at the beginning, in music works, in literature work, in music and so on. A second way to use mathematics to do art is to get inspired from a mathematical concept. For instance, this is a piece of art which is called Relativity by Moritz Cornelius Escher. No equation was used to produce this work of art, but the basic concepts of relativity, which is change of point of view, was used as an inspiration for this. And let me conclude, let me skip this, and show you a last way to use mathematics in the art, is to represent mathematics, to portray it. These, for example, are some mathematical shapes of geometric content when the surrealist artists like Man Ray in the 30s found them in the Institut Henri Poincaré. They thought they were so beautiful that they wanted to portray them in photographs, for instance. Let me show you, this will be the end, a project in which I worked with artist Jean-Michel Alberola for this. And his idea was, let us present the work of mathematicians as it is really. Mathematicians communicate science through lectures. Our best tool for communicating is blackboard. For the moment, no technology has been better than that. And Alberola decided to capture the hand of the mathematician, in this case myself, presenting a proof to fellow mathematicians. Let us see it. It's not intended for the viewer to understand what it is about. Actually, this is about a theorem which I proved with Giuseppe Toscani 20 years ago. But it's intended just to marvel on the beauty of the mathematical formulas. Look at the hand going here and there, the beautiful figures and letters and symbols. The chalk dust rising from time to time. All this has deep meaning for the experts. Blackboard adapts to the rhythm of the thought. Okay. From time to time, the chalk breaks. Some parts of the blackboard are lit, some parts of the blackboard are dark. This is a bit like metaphor of the fact that some parts of the proof are crystal clear and other parts more obscure, maybe. Okay, chalk breaks again. This is a key part. This, for the mathematician, is like the normal way of working. But with the eyes of the artist and the fact that he is presenting them to greater audience, this becomes like work of art. Just admiring this as a tribute to two inventions that which changed the world and mankind. One of these inventions is writing, which has been such an astounding change in our abilities. And another of these inventions is a mathematical formalism, which also has been an amazing change. And all of them here reproduced and symbolized, personified by this blackboard proof. Now with this, I will conclude this speech, and please, next time you hear about mathematics, remember, this is work of art. Thank you.
Avete ascoltato la lezione dottorale di Cédric Villani, matematico francese attivo nel campo della fisica matematica, dei big data e dell'intelligenza artificiale, tenuta il 24 novembre 2017 nel corso della cerimonia di inaugurazione del 930° anno accademico dell'Università di Bologna. Vi aspettiamo alla prossima al Malexio!